How's it going, podcast listeners? This is Brian. I just want to apologize ahead of time for a little bit scratchy audio on my part this week. I'm on the road, don't have all my editing equipment. So I did my best to try to make everything the same volume and get rid of some of the scratchiness, but it's definitely not as high a quality that I like. So I apologize for that. Special announcement in this episode. So keep listening for that, and I hope you enjoy.
So Ethan, what'd you get for Christmas?
Oh man, as I get older, I'm starting to appreciate smaller gifts, and I got some socks and underwear, and I love it.
I was gonna say, I got some nice socks and some long underwear for those cold winter days, and it's probably the most useful present that I've gotten.
socks and long underwear are always great.
Yep. All right, so the holiday break is over. BioFun is finally back in Poke Luca. And Ethan, it's honestly been so long since we've done a podcast that I don't even remember what we've been talking about. Who are the athletes to watch? Who are the teams to watch? It all seems fresh and brand new this year. But what did you think your first impression of the BioFun coming back after the winter break or the holiday break?
Oh, it's always so much fun to kind of have a little break for Christmas and the new year and then come back at the beginning of the new year with some biathlon. And, you know, what I think at the end of our last podcast, we talked about some people might, you know, really crush it when they come back and some people might not crush it when they come back. And I think that's kind of what we saw for the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, podcast listeners, I have a special announcement for you guys. On January 15th, that's Sunday, January 15th, Brian and Ethan's Biathlon Podcast is going to be going live on YouTube, and we encourage you guys to come join us for a live recording of the episode. If you happen to miss it, don't worry about it. The episode will still end up on Spotify and all your favorite podcast apps, so you can find it there afterwards. But yeah, come join us live on YouTube. It's Brian Halligan on YouTube, and leave a comment, engage in the conversation. And yeah, it's the first time Ethan and I will be seeing each other in person for a little over a year now. So we're really excited to try to go live. I'll admit we're both a little nervous about some maybe technical issues or maybe putting our foot in our mouth. But, you know, it'll be a more relaxed podcast episode. And yeah, it should be fun. So again, that is going to be 9 a.m. on January 15th, 9 a.m. Eastern time or 3 p.m. Central European time, right after the women's mass start from Anholtz finishes up. So we'll see you there.
All right, here we go. First hit. And like you said, you know, some people came back after the holiday break and crushed it. And I can't think of a better example than Tommaso Giacomel.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat in the sprint, sixth place, third fastest ski time. Like, what more can you really ask for an athlete that's having the season like he's been having, and back it up in the pursuit, and pretty darn good first weekend of the year.
Yeah, it was really telling. He posted on Facebook after the pursuit race where he came in fifth place. I mean, he was in second place for a lot of the race with just a little bit of inexperience, gave him a few misses at the end, comes in fifth place, and he goes on to Facebook and says, honestly, I'm a little disappointed with fifth place. And you know that you're in a good spot when your best race of your season, or no, I'm sorry, your best race of your career, fifth place, and you know that you could have done better. You know that you had a better result in your hand, and you just lost it with a couple of misses on the last shooting. So really impressive for him. And the ski times were just absurd. Like, he's always been a fast skier, posting ski times in the, you know, 20s to 10 range, 10 to 20 range. But he just lit it up on the trails this weekend. Third best ski time in the sprint, 12th best ski time in the pursuit, fifth best ski time in the mixed relay. Yeah, Giacomel, like, just crazy, crazy good weekend for him.
And it's not like, you know, he had two good races and then, you know, just didn't really perform up to that standard in the relay, but he performed really well in the relay too.
Yeah. And also his shooting. Normally he's a career shooter at 77%, and this weekend he was at 88%. So really bumped up that shooting percentage. So a spike like that tells me that this potentially could be just like a one-off thing. You know, if his shooting percentage goes back down to his career normal, then we'll probably see him back to his career normal. But hopefully this is him, you know, finding his way, and he can keep that shooting percentage higher and continue to perform on the range.
And Italy have put a lot of resources into them hosting the next Winter Olympics in, I guess, 3 years now. And if this is kind of one of the products of all their efforts to have a really good, successful Winter Olympics at home, then I'm really excited, because if he still has a few more years to improve, develop, gain experience at the top of the races, where he hopefully won't miss a few at the end and get bumped back down, then I'm really excited to see what he has in 3 years in Italy for the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. Him, Didier Benoz for the men, they really have filled that gap for Hofer and Vindish. I think Hofer's technically still an athlete, but he just had some surgery or was overcoming some injury. So technically he's still on the squad, but he's been out for injury. Vindish retired. And for the longest time, Italy always had just like those two guys. And suddenly, Giacomel and Didier Benoz have filled that gap and really picked up where they left off, because towards the end of their career, Hofer and Vindish weren't, you know, lights out on the results list. So I think those two guys have really filled that gap. And now suddenly, with Giacomel gaining some experience at the front of the field, hopefully he can start, you know, making his own way and getting his own results. Real quickly, just went back and looked it up. This season, Giacomel is shooting 81%, and last season he was 74%. So in general, everything is up this year. Everything is doing very well. And his skiing is also up from last year as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he progresses. And then on the women's side, obviously they have, I guess not obviously, not everyone follows the biathlon as close as I do, but on the IBU Cup, there's a ton of young women that are even younger than Giacomel that are coming through the pipeline that, yeah, they're looking to peak right for that Anholtz Cortina Olympics. So mixed relay, Italian mixed relay in Anholtz, that's probably the one to watch. But obviously other teams, they'll try to have something to say about that. But just real quick, I really enjoyed the side story that was going on this week between Giacomel and Quentin Fillmaye, because it seemed like those guys were always, always battling head to head. In the sprint, Giacomel caught up to Fillmaye as he passed it. He started right behind him, or a couple of minutes behind him, and caught up to him. So those guys were battling. And there was one point where Giacomel was trying to make a move on QFM in the penalty loop in the sprint. And I just had to laugh to myself, because I was like, here you are, like golden boy, or I guess silver boy of the Olympics, as you know, Bo at the end took more medals than QFM. But anyway, overall winner, champion of the Olympics, and just high on life. And suddenly this 21, 22-year-old is trying to pass you in the most inconvenient spots of all places. Like, you gotta, if you're QFM, you gotta be asking yourself, like what is going on with me? You know, what is going on with my skiing? Is it the skis? Is it the form? Like, what's going on? But it was just funny, because then they met up in the pursuit as well. They were going 1-2 for a majority of the race. And then, I guess, not 1-2, 2-3, as Johannes Tingis was far ahead of everyone. I've been considering second place, first place for a long time.
Yeah.
But then in the relay as well, those guys, they were on the same leg and right next to each other. So it's just been fun to see them battling it out sort of as a side quest.
And to go back to him passing him, trying to pass him in the penalty loop, getting passed in the penalty loop is one of the worst experiences ever in biathlon.
It could be one of the most like like show off type moves you can do in biathlon, you know. Yeah. Aside from like, you know, posing after clean shooting or something like that. Yeah. Trying to pass someone in the penalty loop is just like, oh man, it's that's the absolute insult to injury.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this little, I don't want to call it a rivalry yet, but hopefully this little battle continues, because it was pretty exciting to watch all weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good. So unfortunately, that brings us to a miss. Lisa Vitozzi and Emilien Jacquelin, both ranked third in the world, both missing the pursuit race. And I don't think anyone could have predicted that. Lisa Vitozzi, it just sort of, you know, it was almost like PTSD, bringing back, you know, flashbacks from last season where she just couldn't hit the broadside of a barn and prone. Mm-hmm. And then for Emilien Jacquelin, I think it's just erratic. It just, he's been sort of on that edge all season where it's kind of like, you know, it seems like he's holding on to control by a thread. And then suddenly it just doesn't come together with, looks like he shot two, three. So 50% shooting. Not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you can't have a great race every weekend. And like we've talked about with these two athletes before, especially Jacquelin, like you mentioned, always kind of towing the line of a really great race or not a great race. And sometimes you just go the other way and have a pretty bad race. And it's unfortunate that it was in a sprint and then they ultimately missed the pursuit. They're both super exciting athletes to watch in pursuit and mass start races. And you know, it happens, and I think for them, they just got to be able to, you know, forget about it and move on and get ready for Ruhpolding this next weekend.
Yeah, and Vitozzi at least was able to have a comeback in the relay. Mm-hmm. Super strong leg for the Italian women in the mixed relay. So at least she can sort of write it off, get it out of her head, and move on with confidence. Mm-hmm. Jacqueline didn't even get an opportunity to participate in a relay. Mm-hmm. So it's now going on close to a week. And he's still, I guess, a couple days, half a week. But then by the time he races again, it'll be a week since his last race performance. And he'll just be sitting on that the whole time. So I hope that he can, you know, shake it off, get it out of his head. Mm-hmm. But just knowing him and his personality, I'm sure it's probably just decaying, you know, yeah. At his, it's just eating him away inside, and he's probably just super eager to get out there and right the wrong,
yeah,
correct the ship a little bit. Mm-hmm. But no, it is unfortunate. I don't think either of them or anyone really had either of them missing the sprint, or, you know, mm-hmm. no less both of them. With that performance, Jacquelin dropped from third place to eighth place overall, and that's the sign of the new point system right there, really rewarding those top athletes, third place to eighth place, and then Vitozzi third place to ninth place. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, yeah, that was costly, very costly.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And we know both these athletes are better than their sprint performance this weekend. So I'm not worried. I think they'll just come back and hopefully come back and have some good races.
Ethan, that's why you're my co-host, because I'm always the pessimist, and I'm like, these guys are done, kick them off the team, get Perot up there, get Hanna Auchinteller up there. But you're like, no, they'll be fine, you know, shake it off.
I mean, honestly, if I was a French coach, I probably would have made Jacquelin do a relay just so he had another race and see if he could come back from it. And then if he didn't come back for it, then sit him out the next one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's tough when you got the single mixed relay and then you have a mixed relay, so you only have three spots to fill, and you're the French team that has six, probably seven quality athletes you could throw in any of those spots. So, I mean, yeah, I think, I don't know. It was a risky call, but it's also like, you know what, give Giganaud a chance. Like, he usually, you know, he's the guy number three, Fabian Cloud, he's number three usually, Giganaud's number four. Give Giganaud a chance, you know, he's ranked top 20 in the world, he's a quality, strong, consistent athlete, he just is overshadowed by, you know, a couple guys in the top 10, so he usually never gets the opportunity in these, you know, mixed events. So, you know, good for Anton, he took advantage of the of the opportunity, had a solid leg, and France did pretty well by winning the event. So. So unfortunately, Ethan, and this could be, I think this is the first time ever, we have a second miss today. We are like the Vitozzi and the Emilien Jacquelin of this weekend. Another miss, and that is Terry Langer from Belgium and the rifle incident. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who do not know what I'm talking about, go back and watch the mixed relay. I think it was leg number two. Belgium having an absolute killer event. And Terry Langer falls. And no one likes to see anyone fall. No one likes to see a crash, but we did see a few out there. And obviously, when you fall in biathlon, there's snow in your rifle, there's ice, there's broken equipment. And Langer comes in to shoot, realizes there's snow in his sights, so he can't see anything, and starts trying to pick away at the snow so he can shoot, because again, remember, the clock is ticking. Got to get those targets down and move on. And he ends up pointing the rifle at himself. He ends up putting his face in front of the barrel to try to blow the snow out of the sights in the barrel, using his pole to try to pick the ice out of his sights, and then eventually just gets a spare rifle, shoots his targets, moves on. And actually, honestly, Belgium, best shooters of the weekend by far, best shooters of the race by far, but because of this incident, finished pretty far back. Would have loved to have seen how they would have done if this didn't happen. But what ultimately happened was Langer did not get disqualified, did not get a penalty. Who knows if the IBU eventually approached him individually and said, yo, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. But the image of him pointing a rifle at himself has been circulating through all the medias, all the social medias, and it's become an incident. So what do you think? What did you first think when you saw this, and what's your reaction?
I mean, at first I was very concerned because it goes against all the, rifle safety rules that were taught from day one of doing biathlon, endangering himself and potentially other athletes and other personnel at the race. And no one ever likes to see someone have rifle troubles on the range, especially when they're having a killer race like Belgium were. But I guess looking like technically he didn't do anything wrong according to the rule book. And I think that's something that if you're not super into biathlon and haven't quite experienced everything biathlon has to offer yet, you might not fully understand the rules. Or if you're used to other rifle sports or just hunting or something in general, like, it might have been seen like a big no-no, but biathlon, there are these rules and protocols in place so that if something like this does happen, the athlete can attempt to clear their sights and be able to shoot. But I've never seen something that bad, and it seemed like it was really toeing the line of okay in the rule book, but not totally safe and okay in real life.
Right. And so to clarify, I did go back through the rules and read them pretty vigorously. There are qualifications in the rules that say there's different penalties, whether it's 1 minute added, 2 minutes added, or even disqualification for violating safety rules that are specifically outlined. Going up to the specifically outlined safety rules, there's nothing that says you can't, I think it's very vague, basically. It's when it comes to safety, it's all based on discretion and perception. And so there's nothing that says, oh, you specifically can't point the rifle at yourself, because like you said, like, you know, if you're trying to adjust something on your rifle or clear some snow out, it's like sometimes you have to, lean over the front of the rifle and clean it out. There's been plenty of times where I've been cleaning my rifle and, I'm effectively pointing the rifle at myself, trying to, clean the barrel or the sights or something. And I think you're right. As long as you have it with the, the magazine out, the bolt is open, the rifle is unloaded. There are some situations where you can't not be pointing the rifle at yourself to clean a specific piece of the rifle or part of the rifle. And so to give Langer credit, when he was originally going to start trying to clean the rifle, he stopped and realized, I have to take my magazine out. So in the heat of the moment, he knew to take his magazine out, make sure his bolt was open and the rifle was safe before he started doing all these actions. So if you're a rifle person or a biathlon person, he did it right. He was trying to clean his rifle. The rifle was in a safe situation where there was no bullet, there was no magazine, the chamber was clear, the bolt was open. So he was safe and he was trying to clean it safely. And so for that reason, Belgium did not receive a penalty or a disqualification or anything. However, the perception of the picture circulating of him pointing the rifle at himself is not a good one for biathlon. And personally, I think it tarnishes the image of the sport a little bit. And if you're, you know, just some random guy scrolling through Facebook and suddenly you see a picture of a guy pointing a rifle at himself and the headline, Belgium athlete points rifle at self during biathlon competition. Yeah, you're probably going to click on that article and be like, what the heck is this all about? Biathlon's a crazy sport. Oh my God, like, what are they doing? Like, this is so unsafe. Unfortunately, I just think it tarnishes the reputation of the sport a little bit, which is too bad because I genuinely think that biathlon is a safe sport. I don't know about you, but I've never had an instance on a biathlon range where I felt unsafe. I think there have been people around the biathlon range that I have to watch closely and, you know, maybe remind them sometimes, but there's never been an instance where I've been like, wow, like I could have been shot there, or I did not trust that person, you know, anything like that. Don't you agree? Like, don't you feel relatively safer on a biathlon range?
Yeah, I do. I think the rules that are in place and that have been like drilled into our heads since we started biathlon on day one, like the rifle is always pointed downrange or up. You always have the bolt open unless you're shooting. And no, there's more rules than just that, but the rules that are in place make it very safe. And especially if you follow the rules, like Thierry Langer did, you know, his rifle at that point in the race, when he's, you know, looking down the barrel, is no different than it is when he's dry firing or cleaning it or traveling with it on airplanes or any time that he's basically not training or racing. So it was as safe as it's ever going to be to do something like he did. And I think you're right. I think I agree with it, you know, tarnishing the sport and giving it a bad rep. But like we said, he didn't do anything wrong. He did it as right as he possibly could. And to do that in a race when they're doing really well in a high pressure situation, I think is, you know, kudos to Thierry Langer for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little torn on it just because I work so closely with developing athletes and younger athletes and those who aren't as experienced. And I think from the thing is like, safety in biathlon is just, yeah, like you said, drilled into every athlete from day one. Safety is the utmost priority, particularly at the club level and development level. And you learn these safe habits, and him pausing in the, like stopping before he's going to start cleaning out his sight, removing the magazine and putting it back into his stock. That right there was the example that this guy is safe. He knows what he's doing. He has the forethought to think, wait, don't put your head in front of a barrel that has a magazine in it, right? So that shows that Terry knows what he's doing. However, if I'm like a U15, a young athlete back at home watching this race, and I see this happen, first of all, just, you know, it'll draw my attention because it's like, this usually doesn't happen, and the absurdity of the visual. But then when that athlete who might not be as experienced and might not know as much is in that situation and they recall, well, this Belgium guy just put his face in front of the barrel, blew his sights out and then continued shooting, and not really maybe understanding he actually did take his magazine out and he actually did try to be safe in this instance. I'm just afraid that it could, you know, result in someone performing an unsafe action thinking they understood what they just witnessed. So I guess it all boils down to, what do you think? Should Belgium have been disqualified or reprimanded in some way? Or should the IBU just leave it alone and hope that coaches around the world can use this as a learning opportunity?
I think kind of the second option you said. I don't think they should be disqualified because technically he didn't do anything wrong, and he did it in the safest possible way he could have. He did everything right to make sure that it was safe. And I think if you're the IBU, you go talk to him, talk to Belgium, and just say, you know, like, hey, this is not great, but you did it right, I guess, and just try to make sure that this something like this doesn't happen again. And, you know, it's not his fault. Like, he crashed, and when you crash, you can't control what happens, and this is just the outcome of his crash. But I don't think they should be disqualified, but I do think you kind of, as the IBU, you kind of have to make a statement to kind of clear the air around it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And originally I was thinking, yeah, disqualify them and, you know, maybe set an example for other athletes to be like, listen, like, it's not about the result in this situation. It's about the image and, you know, the sport as a whole. However, after your comment, I think this is actually a good opportunity for coaches to say, listen, here's the situation. This is how he handled it, specifically removing the magazine and making sure the rifle was safe. And because of that, they didn't get disqualified. They didn't get a penalty. So this is how, A, you can deal with the situation safely, and B, like, in terms of race performance, this is how you handle this situation in a race, just from the race perspective. So I agree. Go talk to them. Maybe talk to all the athletes. Maybe remind coaches at the next coaches meeting in Anhalt's, hey, obviously there's a weird safety thing, remind your athletes about safety, and then move on from there. So who knows, hopefully the best thing that comes from this is someone sees an article or a headline with this image and says, the hell is biathlon, and becomes a loyal fan because they want to see some chaos.
we'll have to ask Max Cobb on what the IBU's idea was here.
Yeah, actually, that's good. Maybe we can get him to sit in on our live podcast or something.
He did say he would be in Lake Placid.
Oh, cool. Then we can just grill him for an hour. Tell us about this Terry Langer incident. All right, let's get back to the hits here. Awesome single mixed relay for the USA. I think one of the first times we're kind of talking about the U.S. on the podcast this year, Paul Schomer, Deidre Irwin really crushed it. And unfortunately, just taking a page out of the U.S. playbook, had it up until the very last shooting, where they, by that time, the race was so open and spread out that they only lost a few spots with some penalties in the last shooting. But would have loved to see how they could have done had they cleaned that last stage and finished strong.
Yeah, in previous years, the U.S. has had some success in the single mixed relay with Sean Doherty and Susan Dunkley, and It was cool to see a different team with Paul and Deidre, and I know, like, they were so close, and I think that should make them and the rest of the Americans super excited for the next one, because they proved that they can hang with, you know, the best countries in the world, and, you know, they just missed that last piece, and, you know, it's kind of been the story for the U.S. the past few years, but, you know, that's something that they can control and they can do, and, you know, we've seen Deidre racing and training, and that she can hit these targets, and so I don't feel any disappointment in the performance. I'm kind of excited with the possibility of what's to come in the single mix relay.
Yeah, absolutely, and I mean, nothing against Paul, I love Paul, the guy's awesome. I when I first saw the star list, I was like, whoa, they're going with Paul instead of Sean. Maybe Sean was sick or something. I mean, it's a toss up between Paul and Sean in that role, because we've seen it so often. It's so important to shoot well in relays, even though you get those spare rounds. It's so important to shoot well. And both of those guys are quality shooters. I think Sean is a little bit quicker on the skis. So would have been interesting to see Sean in there, but you know what? Paul did his job. Three spares that he needed in standing on his first standing stage. But other than that, 0+0, 0+0, 0+1. And I think as we move towards world champs, I'm curious to see who they're going to put in there for that world champs single mixed relay team, because I think you're right. Like, this is really good. This is a good sign moving forward for single mixed relays.
And I think relays in general too, because Paul's always performed super well in almost every relay that he's put in. It's hard to imagine that he's not going to get one of the more valuable positions at the next relay, whatever it may be.
Yeah, every team needs that rock on the range. And I think Paul is our rock. Again, not saying Sean's not good at shooting or anyone else is not good at shooting, but I just like, there's something about Paul where I'm just like, no, that dude's got it on the range. And yeah. And also I just want to say, like, Deidre too. I mean, she had those two penalties in the last standing, but she went 0+0, 0+1 in the first leg, and then 0+1 and then 2+3 on her second leg. So her shooting was actually really good too. Just take out that one stage. So, yeah, I think that was really exciting. And honestly, the mixed relay did really well too. Unfortunately, they got pushed back a little bit towards the end of the race. But yeah, just overall, really solid day for the United States on the World Cup. And that's without Sean, who is our top-ranked athlete, and without Joanne, because I think both of them were sick. So, yeah, just overall solid day, fun to watch.
Yeah, excited for, I think next week there's men's and women's relays and rope holding. There is, so I'm excited for those to see how the U.S. can kind of come back, and hopefully they're all healthy and able to put down some good relays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right, here we go. Elvira Oiberg. Not only does she get her first win of the season, but she also gets her second win and backs it up with an incredible relay leg as well. So 40 for 40 this weekend shooting. So I guess maybe she should have been our first shot when we were saying some people came back after the holiday break with, you know, with their head held high. Elvira Oiberg, 40 for 40, only person to go clean all weekend, and puts herself at the front of the field really easily, claws back a little bit of that lead that Julia Simone had going into the break. So really exciting to see her performance this weekend.
You know, it's kind of like watching these results come in. It's kind of like, finally, like, she put it together and did as kind of what the biathlon world was expecting her to do. And it's super awesome that it was after the Christmas break, the beginning of the new year. I think this will set her up mentally for an awesome finish to the season, knowing that she can win these races and she can shoot with the best, because that's always kind of been her downfall, is her shooting. And we've all known that she can ski super fast, so when she does get the shooting down, then there's no one that can really, really beat her. And it was super awesome to see that this week.
And it's funny because it's funny you say that her downfall has been her shooting. I mean, even specifically this year, like, her last year, her season average was 85%, which is the standard on the World Cup. So that just goes to show you how high the standard is in the top 10. This year, she's up to 90% shooting. Like, last year, I think the best shooter overall was like Roslin at 92%, which was, you know, obviously that contributed to her winning the overall. And then maybe like Vanessa Voigt shot like maybe 93%. But the majority of the rest of the athletes were in the like 87 to 90 range in the top 10. And so right now she's shooting 91%, featuring a 94% in the prone. That's crazy. So it's crazy to think that, like, I think everyone knows that if Elvira shoots well, you know, the quote is, if she shoots well, she can't be beaten, because she's definitely one of the faster skiers out there. So it's like, how has she not been dominating the season with 90% shooting? Is Julia Simone really that good this year? Has she improved that much that, you know, she's making it that hard on Elvira, that she's shooting better and skiing faster, and Elvira is not a shoo-in for that yellow bib?
I mean, I guess that's kind of what it seems like to be the case. But I think watching Elvira's races this year, the only time she's missed is when it counts and it matters, on like the last shooting of a pursuit or a mass start, or she's tried to, you know, like, blow everyone away on the skis in a sprint, and then she misses on standing, and then she just falls 10-15 seconds back from Simone. And I think, like, she has the shooting stats to back it up that she has been shooting really well this year. But I think when she does miss, it comes at a crucial time in the race. And if she can clean that up and tidy that up, I don't think anyone can challenge her.
Ethan, tell me how this makes any sense at all, okay? skiing speed, top 10, skiing speed against the top 10. Julia Simon is 0.2 back. So she's actually technically slower than other skiers in the top 10. Elvira Oiberg is minus 1.3. So she's skiing 1.3% faster than the other people in the top 10 and like 1.5% faster than Julia Simon. Shooting percentage. Julia Simon, 91.3%. Elvira Oiberg, 91.1%. And now, like you said, maybe it's just untimely misses. Mm-hmm. Standing percentage for Julia Simon, 85. Elvira Oiberg, 88. So every single metric, Elvira Oiberg is better, including way better in standing, way better in skiing. How is Elvira Oiberg not number one in the world right now? I just don't understand.
I have no idea either.
This makes absolutely no sense. So if you're a betting man, I would say, based on stats alone, if this was Moneyball, Elvira Oiberg is just all around better. She should be number one, but that is what we love about biathlon. Like, on the Nordic side, yeah, if someone's skiing better, their fist points are better, they're probably going to be better. But on the biathlon side, it's about timing. It's about race situation. It's about holding your nerve at the right time. Like, it's probably hard to see right now, but my bet is that in sprints, Elvira probably keeps shooting herself in the foot, and all her misses that she is having are probably coming in the sprint races. So it's making her sprint score pretty bad. And then because of that, it's probably making her pursuits like not as good as they could be. But as I say that, I pull up the sprint score and she's currently second in the sprint overall. So I don't know. I have no idea how Julia Simon is beating Elvira Oiberg right now, but this is going to be a good one to watch for the rest of the season.
For Julia Simon, this feels like in school when you're doing a math problem and you get the right answer, but you have no idea how you did it. And you probably did it wrong, but you end up with the right answer. I don't know. You can't do that every time. So we'll see how the rest of the season goes.
Okay. Leave a comment down below if you know how Simone is better than Elvira Oiberg. All right. So because we had two misses today, we need two spare rounds. First spare round. This one comes from the Penalty Loop podcast. Shout out to RJ and Jordan over there. The other biathlon podcast, as I like to call it. Who has a brighter future on the women's side, France or Sweden?
I'm going to say Sweden.
Ooh, okay.
What about you?
I'm going to go France because a lot of their women are younger, and the Swedish team is still young. However, like Chavot, Lou Jamineau, Colombo, some of those other French women, they're all, believe it or not, younger than the Persson, Magnussen, Oiberg era. And besides Elvira, I don't see another strong crew coming through for the Swedish, but I do see that for the French.
That's fair. And actually, looking at the IBU Cup overall standings, France have 3 in the top 7, and Sweden only have 2 in the top 10. So I may have picked the wrong answer with Sweden, but I think in terms of, you know, the next 2 or 3 years or so, I think Sweden will kind of stay on top. But then after that, I think these younger French women will kind of come into the light.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think over the next couple of years, Sweden women's team will be better. However, it just in terms of depth, I think France has a little bit more depth.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, spare number 2, someone who we have not mentioned yet, but is back, Marta Olsbu Roysland. Successful weekend? Yes or no?
I'm going to say yes, and here's why. If you look at the, you know, she had an all right sprint, one miss, and was roughly a minute behind Elvira Oiberg. But in the pursuit, guess who had the fastest race time on the day? Marta Olsbu Roysland.
Was it? Okay, I didn't even look to see that.
With one miss. And I think first weekend back after missing the first trimester as a whole, I think successful first weekend.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, I mean, we all knew that it was going to take her a minute to sort of shake off the rust a little bit. So she's kind of like where everyone was in Contilati. So she's just, you know, takes her a minute to get back into the swing of things. She's on the road now. So yeah, 16th in the sprint, moved up to 8th in the pursuit. And then did she race a relay?
I don't think so.
No, she did not. So 93% shooting this weekend. Yeah, I'd say that's pretty successful. I think keeping it in the top 20. Yeah, can't be anything but happy about that with good skiing as well. So
yeah, and it's awesome to know that she can still shoot lights out like she did last year, and then the ski speed will kind of come as the season goes on, and I'm excited to see if she can kind of throw down and get in the mix with these top women on the tour.
Yeah. All right, Ethan, another podcast in the books, and I'm super excited to see you next weekend. It's going to be good. It's been too long. Hanging out in Lake Placid for the World University Games. And then we're going live, folks, at 9 a.m., 3 p.m. Central European time on Sunday, January 15th. Check in on YouTube and leave us a comment. Be part of the conversation, right? Come and say hi. And it's going to be super fun. I'm a little nervous because, like I said, I've never been live before, and I don't want there to be technical issues. Honestly, that's the biggest thing I'm nervous about.
Yeah, and I'm super excited. We're going to be live, and we're going to be together in person. We're sitting next to each other. I'm excited.
I was going to make you sit across the room, and then we were going to yell at each other back and forth. Awesome. All right, man. We will see you then, and we'll see you then, listener.